There are fewer than 30 men in the world qualified to drive Formula One. A mere half dozen, perhaps, to win. At this moment, I'm inclined to think you're not one of them.
No, you want to.
Keep up the good work, Stephen, and there you have it. There you go.
Hello, this is Desiree for F1Weekly.com. I'm your in-depth correspondent.
Let's go with the qualifying, Steve.
Welcome to F1Weekly.com. My name is Clark Rogers. I'm the host of the program. I'll be joined by Nasser Hamid, my co-host. This is podcast number 709, August 7th, 2016. Nasser?
Thank you, sir. Today we have the Hunger Edition. Plus, we have a goodie bag with a young, talented English driver. Back to you, Chef Boyardee.
Hamilton seems to be toying with Rosberg. Red Bull move into second in the Constructors' Championship. And Renault looking for a charismatic driver. And, of course, we've got another great interview, this time with Ricky Collard. F1 Weekly now available on WROCK Radio, streaming on WLOR.net. Wednesdays at 11 p.m., Saturdays at 3 p.m., and of course, that's Eastern Standard Time. Nas, welcome to the studio. How are you?
I'm doing very good, sir. Thank you. I must say it's good to be R-O-C-K and R-A-C-I-N-G in the USA.
Exactly. And I'm glad it's summer break, and we're going to be wrapping up these two interesting races where, well, Rosberg does good on pole position, just seems to screw it all up later on.
Well, I'm beginning to feel sorry for him now, really.
I agree, me too.
I mean, the guy must be wondering, you know, I get the pole, which is a good way to win a race, and I still lose to my man, my teammate, whom I've known since we were kids. What do I do now?
You know, I don't know what to do, but it is what it is. I feel really bad for him because he seems to have the machismo-ness and testicular fortitude to get pole position on some of these tight racetracks, and of course, I was hoping Red Bull would dominate in Hungary. Unfortunately, that did not happen because really, and I think Ricciardo said it best, these guys have still some in reserve. In other words, they're holding back. They've been sandbagging, and they're holding back, therefore, because they know Red Bull is going to be making some leaps forward. Ferrari is supposed to, but I don't know what's going on there. But this way, they're prepared for the end of the season where they kick it up a notch. There's a lot of giggling and snickering, but in the end, it's going to be Mercedes on the Drivers' Championship. And right now, when I hear the way Verstappen is talking about, you know, Lewis, about Nico, it's almost becoming cruel and unusual punishment.
Yes, and, you know, at the top of the show, you mentioned toying with Rosberg. So you're right, LCH is toying with him, and looks like Mercedes is toying with Red Bull and everybody else. This is really a two-horse race now, and looks like one of them has a wounded knee now.
I agree. Mercedes has been towing Formula One, mocking us, and it is what it is. At least they're trying to make it exciting for the viewers, but in the end, they're so dominant that Lewis Hamilton, let me put it this way, certainly has chosen the right team to move to from McLaren.
Oh, yeah, man. If he was still at McLaren, Nico would be a two-time world champion.
He would be. And we were so impressed with Nico when he was teamed up with, of course, seven-time world champion Michael Schumacher.
Yes. You know, what has really surprised me, yeah, Mercedes has a lot of resources. You know, they're based in England, and, they, you know, obviously it's very technology-wise, they are very rich in years and experience and tradition. But, you know, it's the same engine that is being given to other teams. And they don't even, I mean, I was expecting at least one of the Mercedes-powered cars to be doing what Red Bull is doing, but none of that is happening. So they must have some mojo that's working very well for them. And I guess we'll have to wait for the rule changes and see if there is some change in the order.
I absolutely agree. The biggest thing and the biggest surprise to me is Williams failing to even beat Ferrari and Red Bull with the same package.
Yeah, again, talk about a team rich in history. I don't know what's going on there, but we sure need some, you know, now we have half of the season over. I think it's now just going to be a battle of the championship between these two guys. And if Red Bull can get another win or two, I would love to see Ricciardo get a win this year. Otherwise, you know, it's not going to be good that new boy won a race and he did not.
No, I don't think we're going to see Red Bull win a race. We'll continue to see the podium simply because they certainly aren't competitive against Mercedes, but Red Bull is definitely beating Ferrari. Ferrari's got bigger problems, and that's why there's talk possibly that they need somebody outside like an Eric Boullier to sort things out and put it all back together.
Yeah, last time they had a Frenchman at the top of the motorsports at Ferrari, they did very well. You know, something on this issue, somebody on the web made a very nice comment. I was reading some racing reports, and this forum posting said that, as far as Ferrari is concerned, that you never put a cigarette in Italian pasta. He was referencing to Arriva Bene, or whatever the name is called, coming to Ferrari from, you know, he was a big marketing man at Marlboro.
Yes, exactly, exactly. And I really, honestly, I think he's doing the best he can, but he doesn't have the background like a Jean Todt had.
Yeah, and you know, first year, when they came last year, they were very happy they won that second race, and, you know, it's a new chapter in Ferrari. I think now they are realizing what Luca was up against, because no matter what your name is or what your title is, you need the whole, you know, kit and caboodle, the whole package to be very good. And Nando sure helped them quite a bit. So
exactly. And as a matter of fact, I think Nando made them look a lot better than they really were.
I don't think they would have had most of those wins he had if they had Jean Alesi or Gerhard Berger on the team.
Yes, but we would have had the fun and the motivation of Jean Alesi and the tears.
Oh, yes, in Montreal, right?
Exactly. So why don't we talk about the Hungarian Grand Prix? Because, of course, this is now a dedicated one-hour program, Nasser.
Yes. What would you like to say apart from that Nico again played second banana to LCH?
Well, that was it. Complete second banana. LCH was in full control. And that's why I used the words toying. What can I say? To be honest with you, the Hungarian Grand Prix was supposed to be, you know, the underdogs might have a chance. And it really didn't play out that way because of the domination all across the nation.
That's very true. And
you're right. Nico gets pole position in Hungary, but the race turned out to be pretty boring. But I was happy to say Fernando Alonso did outqualify Jenson Button in seventh place. Max Verstappen right beneath Daniel Ricciardo in fourth, Sebastian Vettel fifth. And where is Kimi Raikkonen?
Row three, right?
14th.
Yeah, that's Sebastian Vettel on row three, I'm sorry.
Correct. Kimi Raikkonen was thinking about Haagen-Dazs.
Yes, but you know what was very impressive is Carlos Sainz, we call him Carlito sometimes, he was on row three in his Toro Rosso, Ferrari power these days. But yeah, you know, Raikkonen is hot, cold. But now that he has a contract, we don't have to worry about who will be replacing him.
That's true. Once again, Kimi does what he has to do. And he makes up for it in Germany. And then, of course, Renaults look terrible as usual. And they know that charisma is going to pick him up for next season.
And who has more charisma than Fernando Alonso, at least in your books?
I think it'd be me, but I'm a little too old.
Yes.
So there you have it. But Hungary, a bit processional. I wasn't happy. Fernando didn't win, by the way, but he starts seventh and finished seventh. And Kimi Raikkonen, for me, is the driver of the Hungarian Grand Prix, finishing in sixth place.
There you go. And, you know, talking of LCH in Hungary, he is now the most successful driver there with five wins, which is pretty impressive. I have to say, the last two races, Lewis has made the start that I expected from Nico Rosberg. So I guess the pendulum has swung his way at the start also.
Yes, it's not only swung his way, but it's in full control by Lewis Hamilton. And I have to admit, Daniel Ricciardo did a fine job.
Yeah, you know, he was third. But interestingly, this was his only second podium of the season, which is given his talent and how the Red Bull has been moving up is kind of surprised. But, you know, you have all these issues, technical and pit stop problems. So I expect more from him. But he is keeping an edge on Max Verstappen, I have to say.
Yes, he is. Max is definitely, well, Ricciardo admits that he had to kick it up a notch. But that's what's so good about having a great teammate. It elevates you to even higher authorities.
But, you know, Max may be young, but with every race, his testicular fortitude, your favorite saying, or cojones are getting El Grande race by race. I think this guy, I have to agree with Lewis that, you know, previously we were just thinking he's a good talent, and some were even doubting that because of the limited time he had in Formula One. But like Lewis said, Max is a force to be reckoned with.
Yeah, all you have to do is ask Daniel Kvyat.
Oh, yeah, that's a very sad situation, and we'll talk about him in a little bit also.
Exactly. And I have to admit, Carlito did kick some bootay. That's why he'll be back next year for 2017. And Kvyat will definitely be back in Sochi coaching the rowing team.
Yeah, and, you know, Carlito, last year he held his own very good against Max Verstappen, but there was so much hype over Max Verstappen last year that you did not hear about Carlito too much. But one thing he's doing good is he's letting his right foot do the talking, which is really the way every driver should do. And he was eighth in Hungary, and he was also eighth in previous two races. So he's a top 10 guy on a regular basis, and that's quite a lot in a Toro Rosso with a 2015 engine.
That's very, very true. And the Toro Rosso with a 2015 engine is pretty strong, and I can't wait till they get the Renault package next season.
And you know, his teammate, Mr. Kvyat, he is now becoming, he's about to become, I think, Dr. Marco's newest Cromwell. Since he joined, got demoted to Toro Rosso, which was starting with the Spanish Grand Prix, the score is Carlos Sainz Jr., 26 points, Kvyat Dos, also known as 2. So what do you think will happen to him?
I think he's already texting my favorite, Vitantonio Liuzzi.
Yeah, I think his dishes are done.
Yes, his dishes are not only done, but unfortunately, unlike Kamui Kobayashi, he doesn't have a former career or, let's say, vocation to fall onto.
Yes, he probably will end up, you know, there is this big Russian bank, SMP. They are sponsoring a series, Formula 4 in Northern European series, and Mikhail Alishin here, I believe, has sponsorship from them, and they're also involved in sports car racing. So I just hope for Daniel Kvyat's sake that he stays in motor racing, but who's going to call him in from a Formula One team? You tell me if Red Bull drops him.
Maybe Michael Andretti will.
Maybe for his Formula E team.
Exactly. So anyway, why don't you give us a little historics on the vintages over at the Magyar Grand Prix that we love and adore.
Yes, sir. This was quite a coup for our little dictator, Bernard Ecclestone, back in 1966, when he brought the ultimate capital show behind the Iron Curtain. And very rightly so, after all, the very first Grand Prix in France in 1906 was won by a Hungarian driver by the name of Francis in a Renault riding on Michelin tires. I need to find out if the fuel was L for Total or something else. And we're going to look at some, because of time consideration, some famous passes and wins in Budapest. The first edition, 1986, saw what I consider one of the greatest passes in motor racing history, as boys from Brazil, with no love lost between the two, one from Rio and one from Sao Paulo. Yes, the amazing slipping and sliding pass over Senna by Piquet is one for the ages. And those who have not watched this, please check it out on YouTube. You will not be disappointed. Admiral Nelson winning the battle and the race that day. It's hard to believe Senna was again the victim at the same track 3 years later when Arnaige made a quick move in his Ferrari to win the race. And when JV won his first race in 2006 with Honda, the senior vice president of F1 Weekly's European operation fell in love with Formula One, and our world has never been the same since. With victory in 2016, I already mentioned Lewis is not the winningest driver in Hungary with 5 top of the podium slots. And he first appeared on top in Hungary in 2007 with McLaren, and Nando's world has not been the same since. Any thoughts and comments on these factoires?
No, those are great factoires, and poor Nando. He is suffering a lot.
He is suffering a lot. And it's been a decade since he won a championship. And for me, you know, just to think that a guy who dethroned Michael Schumacher, of all the people, Michael Schumacher, and defended the title against Michael Schumacher very impressively, that he has not won a championship since then. It's just, it's mind-blowing, mind-boggling.
Yeah, it just puts a lot of, light on Le Package.
Yeah, he has to be in the right team at the right time, but he will certainly go down as one of the Grand Prix greats. But I, you know, as much as I would like to see happen, I don't think he's going to have a third championship with McLaren Honda. They're still about a second slower than Mercedes, and that's a lifetime in Formula One.
I totally agree. Certainly, it happens, and McLaren next year is his pretty much last opportunity before he goes to that big, great Formula One retirement home in Oviedo.
Yeah, and it will be very interesting to see how he, he's been there for a long time, so there's always changing of the guard. But I just hope 2017 is not a repeat of 10 years later with Stoffel Vandoorne becoming the new Lewis Hamilton.
I have no idea what that means, but certainly Fernando can handle his own.
Yes.
Of course, of course. So let's move on to the German Grand Prix, Nasser, which was fascinating. And once again, Nico Rosberg on pole.
Yes, Lewis did a shampoo job on this one. Repeat and rinse. And this was Nico's home Grand Prix, you know.
That's what the whole thing was amazing for me was. I thought, okay, Nico, you know, he's got the marching music in his Kubelwagen as he's driving to the track. And certainly I thought maybe, you know, he would have been inspired, Deutschland über alles and all that. And that really didn't happen, Nasser.
No, I mean, his start in this race was, we've seen so many times with Lewis, and I'm not saying it was Lewis's problem or there was a glitch in the system or whatever, but I was very, very surprised. I expected him at least to be second, if not leading the race from pole. But, I mean, he got gobbled up by quite a few people. And then, you know, I think his back is not broken yet. It's like there are some hairline fractures there, speaking medically. But I think another win by Lewis at Spa. Spa is a racing driver's track. And if both Mercedes cars are reliable, which I think they will be, and Lewis wins this one, then it will be time for some Kleenex for Nico Rosberg.
Absolutely, you're right. His back does have some cracks, but he's young enough and resilient to handle some of these fissures. But still, very impressive, you have to admit, when Lewis, when they say hammer time, Nico knows what they're talking about.
Oh, yeah.
And I have to also thank Lewis Hamilton for honoring my request on no more the Beeb.
Oh, yes. But he may show up in Abu Dhabi or some fancy place, I'll tell you that.
Let's hope not.
Yeah. Comes up with all sorts of people from the rap industry, entertainment industry. But, you know, Clark, if you can be partying with Rihanna during summer break and bringing Bieber to the track and erasing a 43-point deficit to get a... Remember when Nico had a big lead, he had won four races. I thought that if Lewis can close it to within one win, like 22, 23 points of Rosberg, he'll be in a good slot going into the second half of the season. While he's gone far beyond that, he's put Nico 19. How many points is he put? 19 down, right? I mean, Nico's chance now is basically a back-to-back visit to the DNF chapel for Lewis. Otherwise, it's going to be very, very hard.
It is going to be very, very hard. And once again, Daniel Ricciardo out-qualifies Sebastian Vettel in third. Vettel fourth. Max Verstappen, very impressive, in a fifth position above Kimi Raikkonen. Basically, both Red Bulls out-qualified their respective teammates or their equivalents over at Ferrari. Fernando Alonso, once again in P7. Carlos Sainz Jr., again in the top 10, right behind him in 8. And Williams continues to bog down. I mean, Valtteri Bottas in 9th, but where's Felipe Massa? What's going on here? 18th?
Yeah, I think his time is up at Williams.
Yeah, and he's always got an excuse. It's always somebody else. Remember Felipe Massa complaining about Fernando's blocking him like 4 miles ahead?
At Monza? Oh, correct. That was classic.
That was classic.
That was absolutely amazing.
And that has really set the tone for me ever since.
Against Massa?
Yes.
Yeah, but keep in mind, you know, had it not been for Nelson Piquet Jr., I would be world champion today.
You believe that deep down?
Yeah, I think so.
That's possible, but, you know, it is what it is. Anyway, qualifying was one thing. Nico Rosberg in front of his people was another thing. But then, unfortunately for our buddy, lap one, the lights go out, and what a disastrous start for Rosberg. Hamilton overtakes Rosberg on the opening turn, and the German is also overtaken by Verstappen and Ricciardo. Dude, the giggling in the gut. That's what I come up with. I'm just going, your German Grand Prix, what was he thinking?
Yeah, and the thing is, you know, they can mount a charge back if they're not leading or if something goes wrong and they're in the fifth or sixth place. Yeah, he can only charge back as far as that Mercedes package will take him. You don't see much coming from, you know, he cannot put in a Lewis Hamilton charge or a Fernando Alonso charge. That's just my opinion, observation. What say you?
I agree with you. Now, I was very impressed with Verstappen moving into third place, Ricciardo right behind. But let's not forget, lap two, Rosberg is doing his best to get past Ricciardo, which is not as an easy tack. And let's not forget, Ricciardo is celebrating his 100th Grand Prix.
Yes, and three wins, not bad, given the package he's had over the years.
I agree. And on the radio comes Massa on lap three saying, I've been hit, I'm a wounded warrior. Call a corpsman. Unfortunately, there's no hit. We can't find anything that says he's been hit. We believe that he's now delusional.
That's pretty sad. But I have to say this, you know, I've seen over the years, you know, Graham Hill in Formula One, Mario Andretti in IndyCar racing, when drivers keep going way beyond their sell-by date, it's very, very disheartening. I will not say disappointing, but pretty disheartening. You don't want to see people. I mean, I have to see Massa, who was so graceful when he lost his championship some years ago to Lewis, and, you know, he had that bad accident in Hungary, to come back, and then now just, you know, he cannot even outrace Valtteri Bottas.
Exactly. No, I agree. And luckily, all the radio rules have been dropped. I just wanted to mention that. We had forgotten to at the beginning of the program. We probably should have, because it's important. But F1 decided we were silly. The FIA decided we were really silly, so no more radio restrictions.
No, that's very good. And I've noticed, you know, that slowly and slowly they are going back to some common sense. You know, this year cars sound much better than last year. And you can tell even by watching on the on TV or on the web. And now they have dropped this silly thing. And I'm glad they are not bringing the halo, which I really don't like. Maybe the Red Bull type canopy might be a better idea. But I'm just hoping, I don't think this last wish, which is my most important wish, I don't think we're going to get back to the sound of the Matra V12 or even the V10s of days gone by.
I agree. And just to mention, everybody's passing Massa, so we're assuming Massa has some kind of problem with his car. So I don't know. But when Ricciardo pits on lap 13, he comes out ahead of Rosberg. Just, for me, very nice and very comforting.
Yes.
Very interesting. And on lap 16, Rosberg is told that he will go to Plan B because he's lost so many places at the start of the Grand Prix. Plan B is now in effect. So very, very interesting. And we really don't see Lewis Hamilton that much in this Grand Prix because he's taken full control of the German Grand Prix.
Yes. And that's the way it is. But, you know, lately, last two races, I've seen there's quite a bit of good racing going down in between from like fighting for third and up to 10th place to get into the point, which has been pretty impressive, I have to say.
Oh, yes. I mean, Gutierrez being chased by Hamilton, Magnussen overtaking Massa. The Renault drivers actually were pretty impressive.
Yes, I love that comment from Ricciardo. I love this guy about Esteban Gutierrez.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. So, in the end, it was very exciting.
Yeah, but, you know, we talk about Rosberg and what's the other guy, Massa. But if you ever want to see a man mentally beaten, please check out the YouTube interviews, post-race interviews with Daniel Kvyat. I mean, this guy is, you can just tell this guy is lost.
I agree.
Yeah, it really goes down to that saying, be careful what you wish for, just might come true. Maybe another season at Toro Rosso might not have been very bad for him before he was promoted to Red Bull. But that's the way of Dr. Marco and Red Bull, And who can blame them? They did find Vettel and Daniel Ricciardo. And of course, Max, they took on almost at the time he was making big waves in Formula 3. But it's good.
I like the part where it looked like that Verstappen was told to let his teammate by.
Yes. And now they're seeing Verstappen has proven that he can be a good team player.
Yeah, so I thought that was a big decision for Verstappen, becoming more mature and realizing I need to play the game now so I can be dominant in the future.
Yeah, I think that, once this pack, once they get this car as competitive as the Mercedes, it would be fantastic to watch the intra-team rivalry between Max and Daniel and how Max will go up against LCH. That will be fantastic. I'm really looking forward to it.
Very exciting. Of course, the big moment was when Rosberg is fighting with Max Verstappen, pushes Max Verstappen to the outside of the track. This is where, later on in the interview, Verstappen says, Lewis, how Nico drives, like a wild and crazy guy, insinuating that, of course. But Nico Rosberg is given a 5-second penalty for that move.
Yeah, which was not a surprise, but this thing to happen twice in back-to-back races is kind of, raising eyebrows that, hey, this is not the way to keep your position, I mean, the guy just goes all the we're turning right and his car is almost to the left. But, it's racing. Who wants to lose a win or a second place? So I can understand that. And these, I have to say, these stupid penalties, which I really don't like, and all these off-track limits, I just don't like them. The thing is, if you do a Zanardi, like leave, get all your four wheels and go off-track and come back and win the race, then I can understand a 15-second penalty. And frankly, if they're going to do a penalty, to give somebody a 5-second penalty and he loses no position, I mean, they're better off giving a one-place penalty or a two-place penalty, however that has to be worded. But I don't like this, off-track thing. It's available for everybody, if two wheels, I think it's part of the fun of watching a little bit car going off-track, guy pushing all the way. And, if you look at pictures going back 60s, 70s, you see a lot of these cars off-track a little bit. So they need to address this also.
No, I agree, and I thought the weird part was it looked like he was held for 8 seconds.
Yeah, Tag Heuer malfunction, according to Toto Wolff.
Exactly. I think they're going back to Flickr-Flucker watches.
Maybe they should get for Timex, what they say about Timex.
Yes, yes, yes. In the end, Felipe Nasr has to retire. Felipe Massa has to retire, so the two Brazilians are out. And, I'm very curious on what Williams is planning to do. Felipe Massa should have retired and left Formula One gracefully, but I think he's going to pull Rubinho and try to go somewhere else, maybe Renault, I'm not sure. And the talk of Williams hiring Jenson Button, I find very strange. I mean, Jenson Button is old, long in the tooth. Why do these teams want old people around?
I'll tell you, a lot of experience, and that really makes for a big difference. If you look at Jenson Button, how he held up against Lewis Hamilton was very impressive, and how he's holding up against, standard of measurement, from all sides, Mr. Nando. I think he'll be a very good team leader. I think he still has a lot of competitive racing left in him. And the thing is, I remember when he was with, remember Bar Honda, where they were going nowhere like McLaren Honda these days. In all those races, I think it was only one time he lost his cool. And he never made comments like, GP2 engine. So he's not going to embarrass Mercedes or Frank Williams at this stage of the partnership and age and whatever you want to call it.
I understand that, but I liked the Alonso battle with Perez for 10th place. Perez definitely pushing for his career. A lot of talk about him going to Renault. So I don't know if he's charismatic enough for Renault, but we'll see what happens. And then there's talk about maybe rain coming. There's a little rain scene on Hamilton's visor. Just a couple of spits from an old bird. That bird could have been Jenson Button. But in the end, a fantastic finish for Lewis Hamilton, who, in other words, it's another nail in the coffin.
Oh, yeah. If there's a race in the remaining events at one of these races, then I'm going to tell you something. We're looking at least a 15 to 18 point jump for Lewis Hamilton, because Nico Rosberg, according to you, borrow a phrase from David Hobbs, can do diddly squat.
I agree. And I was happy for both Red Bull drivers. Verstappen on the podium, Ricciardo another podium. The bizarre part was Ricciardo drinking champagne out of a smelly, stinky shoe.
He said it's called a shoe in Australia. I guess that's what the rugby players do. I don't watch rugby, so he must be right, you know. But that was very strange, I guess, to drink from a shoe.
I understand. And I want to also mention, maybe people didn't notice, but the Chandon champagne that we see in Formula One today is not from France. It's a subsidiary of Moët Chandon, and they are now spraying California champagne.
Oh, very good. The Golden State, man, comes into motor racing. Shall we do a word from our potential sponsor now?
I think we should.
Okay, this is, we're hoping, some sponsorship dollars from HP, as in Hewlett-Packard. Many years ago, they gave the world the HP scientific calculator, and some years ago, they also sponsored the Williams F1 team. Now they are working on their latest technological breakthrough. This clock is called the Rosberg Rotisserie Calculator. This device will try to answer the question, if you can't win the championship with a 43-point lead, how will you win when you are 19 points down? And this will be quite a calculation. And I would like to see Nico Rosberg go down 25 points, which Lewis Hamilton did 2 years ago, and both times he was able to overhaul that deficit. Do you think Nico Rosberg will ever be able to overhaul him if the cars do not have any issues?
I think the answer lies at Spa. Whatever happens at Spa will be the final nail in the coffin.
I think the remaining races, most of them will favor Lewis. You know, Spa is a driver's track. Monza is brute speed. And, you know, Singapore is a street track. That's going to be advantage Hamilton. And if there is a race in Japan or wherever, it's just things are looking very good as long as the cars hold up. So in my final analysis, what Nico needs after Germany to win the championship is a call to Jeff Gillooly to take care of his problems. And by the way, Mr. Gillooly has not changed his last name. So if Nico wants to contact us to get him the info, he can send an email to thecharminghost@f1weekly.com.
Keep up the good work, Nasser. Another outstanding job. Let's take a quick break and be back with Motorsports Mondial. So we'll be back after this brief message.
Bonjour. Want to stay in a charming accommodation near the historic and famous Cognac and Bordeaux regions of southwestern France? Imagine yourself surrounded by the rolling hills and vineyards of the Charente region, sipping on cognac or the local aperitif Pinot de Charente. Opening in June 2012, Bassinon offers traditional French country lodging in rustic stone cottages, fully equipped with modern comforts, suitable for families, travelers, or groups. Share a home-cooked meal with your host and soak in the ambiance and joie de vivre of the tranquil and rural French countryside. Bassinode is only a 90-minute drive from the Bordeaux airport or 30 minutes from the nearest train station in Angoulême. Navigate to bassinode.com for information or to book a reservation now. That's BASSINAUD.com. Allons-y!
Welcome back to F1Weekly.com. Clark Rogers here, your host. And now, as we spin the globe and go around the world with Motorsports Mondial and the King, the Swami himself, Nasser Hamid.
Thank you, sir. Today, Clark, we will start with sad news from New Zealand. Chris Amon died at the age of 73. Last week, he was suffering from cancer. And for me, two things stand out about him. You know, the first Formula One Grand Prix race he ever went to. You know, a lot of drivers say they saw a race with their dad and they got excited. But the first time he went to a Formula One event, it was not as a spectator, but he was a driver in that race. So that was very impressive. And the second was, and this has been quoted many, many times, that when he left Ferrari, Enzo said to him, "I will win a race before you do." But despite that comment and the fact that Chris never won a Formula One championship race, he will be remembered as a great racing talent, much like passionate fans of Formula One remember Ronnie Peterson and Gilles Villeneuve. In his Formula One career, Eamon did win some races, but as luck would have it, these were non-championship events. On the championship trail, he was on pole 5 times and had 11 podium finishes. Now keep in mind, back in those days, they were not having 18-20 races. One of the more famous wins that got away from him was the 1972 French Grand Prix, which he dominated and would have surely won the race, but for a pit stop due to tire puncture. And this, I believe, was at Clermont-Ferrand. He and Bruce McLaren gave Ford their first Le Mans win in 1966. In the rain-soaked 1968 Formula 2 race at Hockenheim, Eamon ran behind Lotus, and when he came into the pits at the end of the race, he said to Mauro Forghieri, the famous Ferrari engineer, that his rain tires were so bad even Jim could not pull away from him, thinking it was Jim and the Lotus. When Forghieri told him Jim did not finish the race, the look on his face told Eamon something had gone wrong. He is referred to as the unluckiest driver, and his response was that it was just the opposite. He was the lucky one. Then he would read the names of his competitors who did not survive their racing days. And you know, back in the 60s and 70s, that list was very long, unfortunately. In life, after racing, he took care of the family farm. He was awarded an MBE for services to motorsports in 1993. And Martin Brundle said it best, and I quote from his tweet, "Very sad to hear that the great Chris Eamon has died. Met him a few years ago in NZ. What a lovely man. Approachable, humble, a class act." End of quote. Life goes on, and before we move on to some championship at this stage of the season, any word on Chris Eamon from you, sir?
No, very disappointed. Not only that, but I was expected to run across him, meet him at an answer and question session at Pebble Beach in a couple of weeks' time. And I would think that he would have been also with David Hobbs at Laguna Seca doing the circuit here for Monterey Week. So very disappointed, expecting to meet somebody of great racing heritage and pedigree, and he passed away so quickly and so young. So big bummer for everybody.
Absolutely. You know, it's sad that, you know, this Gerard Ducarouge passed away. And, you know, we need to go out and remember when you and I met Jack Brabham, how happy we were?
Yes, very, very happy. We were little children looking through the window at candy.
Yes, absolutely. You know, I mean, like you said, it's a great motor racing heritage that is going, at getting deprived. We're getting deprived on a regular basis now as everybody's getting up there in age. But, you know, Clark, life goes on. And we move on to some championship at this stage of the season. We'll start with Haas, our favorite GP2. Unlike last year when Stoffel Vandoorne was the runaway champion, this season we have 5 drivers separated by 14 points. Leading the pack with 113 points each are Russian Sergei Sirotkin and Frenchman Pierre Gasly. Sirotkin is the kid whose Pepito signed a deal to invest a few billion rubles in Sauber a few years ago. But I guess his cash-laden ferry became the Edmund Fitzgerald of Lake Geneva. Pierre Gasly is a 20-year-old Francais who could be the next mini-professor. This is his second GP2 season courtesy of Red Bull. If he wins the championship, then I am sure the guillotine will fall on Daniel Kvyat. Third in the championship at this stage is Italian-speaking Swiss driver, one of our favorite from a few years ago, Rafael Marciello, with 102 points. He is in his third GP2 campaign. If this was his performance last year, he probably still would be in the Ferrari Driver Academy. 2 points behind in fourth is Italian Antonio Giovinazzi. Good performance from him. Fifth on 99 points is English driver Oliver Rowland. Last year he dominated the World Series by Renault, and if he can do what Nico, Hamilton and Hulkenberg did in GP2, that is win the championship in rookie season, that will be very special as the field is field this year is very, very strong. He is backed by Racing Steps Foundation of England. They sponsor talented drivers who are not sponsored by a global giant called DDP, which stands for Daddy's Deep Pockets. come to GP3 now, please remember this name, Charles Leclerc. He is from Monaco, however you want to call it, and is the current leader of GP3 with 126 points. He is managed by Nicolas Todd. Second is Anglo Thai driver Alexander Albon, who is only 3 points behind Leclerc. Esteban Gutierrez, Valtteri Bottas, and Daniel Kvyat are previous GP3 champions to move up to Formula One. European F3, Canadian Lance Stroll. This is an interesting situation, Clark, here. Lance Stroll is the clear leader with 296 points. Second is German Maximilian Günther with 235 points. Lance is clearly sponsored by DDP. His Papito Lawrence was an investor in Ralph Lauren, and I believe in Michael Kors also. The word is Lawrence is paying Williams F1 team some serious bucks to do 20 days of testing in a 2014 Williams F1 car. This and Kit's talent should prepare him well for the 2017 F1 season. I can see Jenson Button and Lance Stroll eating some Tim Hortons donuts at the 2017 Canadian Grand Prix. Would you like this pairing, Button and Stroll?
Sure, why not? You know, should be lots of laughs. It'd be good to have a young one and an elderly man. And the young one can help Jenson Button with his, you know, walker.
Expedite his exit. Okay, now we move on to IndyCars. Three drivers from three different continents are at the top of the IndyCar standings with one common theme. All drive for Mr. Penske. Simon Pagenaud is the championship leader with 484 points. Will, the Australian power, is second on 426. Third on 373 points is the Dancing with Stars and IRS Auditors champion, Helio Castro, no dash Nevis. WRC, the top three are all VW drivers. Frenchman Sebastian Ogier is the only driver with more than 100 points. He leads the WRC championship with 143. Second is Andreas Mikkelsen of Norway with 98. Jari Matti Latvala of Finlandia is third with 87 points. One of my favorite motorsports, MotoGP, is next. Honda rider and two-time world champion Marc Marquez is leading with 170 points. Fellow Spaniard on a Yamaha, Jorge Lorenzo, is second with 122 points. His Italian teammate Valentino Rossi is third with 111 points. Fourth is the Barrichello of bikes, Danny Pedrosa, on 96 points. And shall we talk about the goodie bag now?
We need a goodie bag,
yes,
Master.
Sir. Today's goodie bag features an interview with Ricky Collard, young English driver hoping to win the British F3 Championship this year. This conversation was recorded at Silverstone this past June with VIP transportation, as always provided by European Support Vehicle Number 1 and its pilot, Mr. Brazier. This weekend, Ricky won two of the three races at Snatterton. His papa is a driver in the BTCC, and there is only one round remaining, so we wish Ricky all the best. And please enjoy this conversation with him.
Okay, folks, it's raining here in Silverstone, and we are talking to the guy leading the championship in British F3, Ricky Collard. Welcome to F1 Weekly. How are you today?
Yeah, very good, thank you. We're here in sunny Silverstone, and as predicted, it's raining again.
Yes, very true. Now, first question I want to ask you is this. How deep is your love for motor racing? If Dad was a cricket player, would you still be a racing driver?
For sure. Obviously, it's helped by the fact that my granddad was world champion, my dad was European champion, so I've got some pretty big boots to try and fill. But my passion and love for the sport is incredible. And, I think it's something that maybe from the outside it's quite difficult to understand, but motor racing is like a drug. It's like once you get it, you can't do anything to continue and fight for what
I
you
can
love.
Get enough of this drug. Okay, so how old were you when you decided you're going to follow in your dad's footpath or granddad, and also granddad's footpath? Or was there any some sort of, not a push, but like inclination from your family to go into the same field?
My parents have always been very open-minded, so with regards to if I wanted to play football, they'd support me if I wanted to play football, or I hate football, but any kind of sport, because I started at probably the age of around 5. I had a motocross bike, and I used to race my motocross bike everywhere, and from then it then got stolen. I think maybe my mum might have stolen it because I crashed many times on this. And then I had a dirt car, which was probably even worse, and I used to race it up and down the field, and Well, that was from about the age of 6 to 7, and then when I was 8 years old for my birthday, I got a real go-kart that I could then drive on the kart circuits in the UK, and from then, my passion and love for the sport has just grown, and I then become, through the ranks in karting, done British, European and World Championships, and I'm now in British F3 where we are today.
Absolutely. Now, which part of jolly old England are you from?
I'm from Hampshire, which is just down south, outside London.
Great. Now, tell us about your karting career, and you know, mentioned you raced overseas also in Europe. Tell us a little bit your early days of karting, what do you remember most, and when you first went to the European karting circuit on the continent, what was the biggest difference?
I think in the UK I had quite a successful karting career. I had a big crash, unfortunately, in 2012. And that was fighting for the European Championships, and we were in a very, very good position. This is the same time when, you know, you had the likes of Verstappen I was racing against, which is now in Red Bull with Formula One. So I was up against some really quick and talented young guys, and I think we had good pace, but unfortunately when I had my big crash, it cost me very dearly. But I think I finished top three in the majority of the championships I competed in. In the World Championships, I had the most amount of race wins, most amount of podiums, most amount of fast laps. Unfortunately, I couldn't quite close the championship, but I think what I've learned from karting, I can now use for sure in Formula 3. I used it last year in Formula 4. And it's, like I say, I had an impressive record in the World Championships, but I still didn't come home with a big trophy. So I've learned a lot in the fact of how to mentally approach a race weekend. Which is why I think we're leading the championship at the moment.
Now, what was missing? You were saying you were winning a lot of races but not bringing home the championship.
Do or die.
That yeah. was the attitude.
Yeah, I think from a young age, I've always been a bit of, I don't know, maybe a bit of a crazy kid. I've broken many bones and done some stupid things in my time, but I think now I'm at the age where I'm starting to mature and starting to learn, and yeah, it's taking risks, but calculated risks.
Well, you're saying crazy, and no wonder you have loco as a drink, which means crazy in Spanish, my Spanish is correct. Okay, when you moved from karting to single-seater racing, what was the biggest adjustment for you?
I think the biggest adjustment is the lack of track time you get. In karting, you're out nearly every... On a race weekend, you start testing on a Wednesday, you have like 8 sessions or 6 sessions in a day, and that you then go all the way through from Wednesday all the way through to Sunday. Whereas in the cars, you test on a Friday, you get maybe 2 sessions. You then go into qualifying, and you have to capitalize in everything that you do.
Now, you're wearing this BMW Motorsport Junior jacket. Tell us how you got into this program and what does this entail?
Yes, very fortunate to be given an opportunity by BMW this year. Sorry, that's my teammate, Lando.
I think you were doing the same to him when I was talking to him.
Yeah, probably. But, they selected about 20 drivers, took us all out to Munich in Germany, in the headquarters. Done some various tests, fitness tests, mental tests, stress tests, every interview as well, and asked us lots of different questions, and I must have answered them in the right way because I'm where I am at the moment. There's 2 of us that have been selected, me and Nicky Menzel. We done a test in Dijon, which was very positive and went very well for myself. And it depends on how I do this year. Obviously, it's a very, very important year. And this has got to be probably one of the most prestigious championships in the UK. I think if I can wrap that up, then maybe it might help my chances with BMW for the future.
Now, obviously, British Formula 3 produced names like Senna and Fittipaldi. What is your game plan? We talked briefly about this yesterday. What is your game plan moving forward? Stay in single-seaters or be like Papa and go to tin tops?
It's a question I get asked quite a lot, and a lot of people think, oh, you know, unfortunately, we have to do the British F3 because we can't find sponsorship at the moment to do European F3, and it's something that I'd love to go and do. I don't believe there is no reason why I shouldn't believe that Formula 1 is still a goal. You just name some of the fantastic athletes and racing drivers that have won British F3 and gone off to be champions in Formula 1. So if I can win the championship this year, then there's no reason why the F1 dream should still not be a possibility. But it's trying to find some sponsorship and trying to find the right man and the right investor to hopefully believe in me and take me there, because you know, I believe in myself. I believe that in the team as well, that give me a fantastic car, that we can do it this year, and there's no reason why we can't do it again next year in the European F3 series.
Now, talking of sponsorship and all that, have you looked at some of your fellow Brits have been extremely successful in on the other side of the pond? Have you looked at? Are you looking into chances in America, opportunities in America?
I was very lucky at the age of 13. I got a fantastic opportunity to go to the States. They took the top three in the UK Championship and the top three in the US, and they swapped us over. So unfortunately, the US guys had to come over here and race in the rain, and we got to go over there and race in the sunny States. And it's a much more of a show, and I really enjoyed my experience out there. Obviously, I've got Colton Herta, which is the Herta name is pretty big in the States, and sort of looking at the IndyCar route, NASCAR route, there's obviously a career, and as a young driver, that's what I want to do. I want to make myself a career. I'd love to go out to America, for sure. Love it.
Now, you know, USA is a little bit bigger in size than UK, so which part of the United States were you at?
I haven't thought about that bit yet. All of it.
No, where did you go to for the racing part?
Sorry, I went to Indy, Indianapolis, and there was a kart circuit just outside Indy.
Claremont?
It might have been, yeah.
Claremont or Carmel, I believe.
Yeah, I think there was a lake on the exit of one of the corners, and unfortunately, if you were on the outside, I think you got pushed into the lake. So I loved it, absolutely loved it. It's a show.
Now, we always ask drivers who come and race in the United States, when you are there, what's your choice? Cheeseburgers or hot dogs or both, like Montoya?
Ooh, you didn't include barbecue ribs there. It's Jack Daniel's barbecue ribs, they're my favorite.
Very good. You're on the right track, sir.
Yeah, good. I have to just, it's like you say, it's anyone in America is living a fantastic life, it looks like, from the outside. And as a young British racing driver, I'd love to go out there and go over to the other side of the pond and see how we mix it up.
Yeah, you know, your future employer BMW, they are involved in sports car racing, IMSA racing and all that. I really suggest that you should at least do the Sebring 12 hours and Daytona 24 hours.
I would love to, but obviously there's, I don't know how many drivers exactly are on the BMW books, but there's a load of drivers, and I'm only a youngster at the moment, so I don't know if they give me an opportunity like that yet. Obviously, I definitely would never turn it down, for sure. But the opportunities that I'm getting given at the moment are fantastic, and I'm just taking every single one as it comes. But Daytona, that sounds pretty cool.
Where would you like to see yourself in 5 years?
Formula One, or IndyCar, or just a professional racing driver.
No, you have to keep the dream alive. Okay, how about a message for listeners of F1 Weekly? We have listeners all over the globe, quite a few in the UK also, one of them you just met. So how about a message to all our listeners, please? And tell them about your website also.
Yes, so everyone can follow me on Twitter, at Ricky Collard, or Instagram as well, which is at Ricky Collard. We've got websites, www.collardracing.com, and there you can follow the history of the family and our passion for motorsport and how much we love it. But I suppose a message that I can really give out is, you know, I'm very grateful for the opportunities that I've been given this year, and I just hope that I get an opportunity next year.
Thank you so much.
Ricky, thanks for joining F1Weekly.com. Nasser, another outstanding motorsports mondial. And of course, due to time constraints, I can't get to the 50 words from the F1 Weekly forum, but we'll try to make it up during the summer when there's nothing to talk about. We'll do a special half hour dedicated to 50 words from some of the previous races that I have not been able to bring to the show. So there you have it. Delayed, but never forgotten, right now.
Very true, sir. Thank you so much.
Very, very true. And anyway, so we're all going on vacation with Fernando and his RV. Where are we going, Nasser?
I think we are going to an English town called Frome. That's where Jenson Button is from. And he's going to tell him, please stay, because if you go away, they'll bring Stoffel Van down. And I don't like to see rookies with me.
I understand. Keep up the good work, Nasser. I think that's outstanding. I'm going to enjoy a nice vacation staying here at the Palatial Studios, watching the Olympics and eating hot dogs.
Very good. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. And I want to thank all the listeners who listen. Good night. Bye-bye.
Complicated man, but no one understands him but his woman.